Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
It is the APC podcast from AcmePackingCompany.com and SB Nation, talking Green Bay Packers all the live long day for you fine folks. I am Zach Rapport, dialing it in from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Follow the show at the APC pod, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff, and pinch hitting on short notice, man. You are my like speed dial hero these last few weeks. I am joined by Tex Western. How are you, man?
I'm good. It's been an interesting day, but always happy to talk after a Packers win. That's always the best part.
And you got some bourbon there on brand. I feel like you've pretty much had, it's like your podcast fuel at this point. Every time we're on air.
Just about. It's some form of whiskey. So today I'm going with the classic Willet bourbon. But one of my favorites is, and it comes in probably the coolest bottle you'll ever find. It's shaped just like the still at the distillery. So take a look. Looks like a genie bottle. It's great.
Excellent. All right, everybody, follow, subscribe, all that fun stuff. I think I already said that. The Packers raising eyebrows on Sunday as they beat the Vikings 43-34. Thanks to everyone who downloaded and listened to our rapid recap episode immediately following the game. It got a lot of traction, a lot of positive feedback, and we really appreciate that. And we are going to try to commit to doing that after every game this season. So, Tex, it feels like only yesterday you and I were here talking Green Bay Packers. But this time, we're here to do some note nugs for the first time in the 2020 season, our notable nuggets. And I realized as I was writing this segment out that we didn't tweet out from the podcast feed at the APC pod on Twitter asking for listener note nugs after the game. So that was a bad job by me. We will try to do that going forward to have some fan reaction to include in the segment. But notable nuggets, hashtag note nugs, just a little bite-sized tidbit from the game, something to chew on. And I'm going to go first. Jair Alexander is my note nug, picked up right where he left off last season, and he has got me very, very excited. I saw Gil Brandt tweet out that Alexander became just the fifth player in the last two decades to register a sack, an interception, and a safety in the same game. And it turns out that the tackle for the safety was an instinct move and that he was supposed to be in coverage and he thought they were going to run. So he made a quick decision and he realized he was incorrect, but he stayed decisive, made a great play, kind of a Charles Woodson move there, like to take a calculated risk and have it pay off. And as Greg Jennings might say, Jair Alexander is the favorite of me.
Yeah, that was a fun play, and it was even more fun learning about that afterwards, knowing that if he hadn't gotten home, Kirk Cousins probably would have had a 97-yard touchdown to somebody. There was a reverse angle shot that I saw today of Adam Thielen completely wide open down the middle of the field. And so if he doesn't have the speed that he has to close that quickly and get that sack, that's bad news. And Matt LaFleur was funny about it on Monday too, because he alluded to it when one of the reporters asked him, you know, how you evaluate that, or how you treat a guy when he goes a little rogue but makes a big play. And he was saying that it's kind of a fine line between, you know, you want to encourage your guys to trust their eyes and trust their instincts, but if they're too reckless, obviously they can get burned. But thankfully it worked out that time.
Yeah, it's almost like the Holmgren, Favre, whatever you do, don't run kind of moment.
Yeah.
All right, Tex, as you take a sip of bourbon, what is your note nug coming out of this game?
I think my note nug is that the Packers got the most like perfectly encapsulating game from each of their three wide receivers. So Davante Adams, very high usage, tons of targets, tons of catches, big in the red zone, you know, big yardage, you know, your go-to guy. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, bunch of targets on deep throws, two terrible drops, but a couple of really big plays, including that touchdown. And then Alan Lazard being the, you know, not a real high volume guy, but a very productive player. And I feel like that's kind of the ideal for this offense is when those guys, you know, play those roles. Obviously you'd love to cut those drops down for MVS, but that's kind of, it's kind of who he is at this point. Right. And you sort of got the perfect game that encapsulates who each of those three receivers really are.
Yeah. How long did it take James Jones to get over the drop bug? Because I feel like he had that for a while early in his career.
Yeah, it felt like a couple years. Because, he was part of the 07 class. I feel like it was like the Super Bowl year of 2010 or so that it really seemed like he kind of had that under control. And, I mean, even Adams had that early on in his career, too. His first 2 years, and then he had that breakout year in 16. So, you know, maybe he'll be able to, maybe Marquez will be able to get past that this year. That'd be great. Because, you know, he probably left another 70, 80 yards on the field with those two drops. That second one in particular on that bomb up the, you know, on that deep crosser, or deep post, you know, that could have been a 60 yard touchdown. So, Aaron Rodgers' stat line could have been even better than it was if not for those two drops, but, still had a pretty good game and obviously made a couple of huge plays.
Yeah, and to hear Rodgers talk about it, I'm not sure if it was post game or the following day for his press availability, but talked about it wasn't an issue of losing or having to maintain trust in MVS, that he has his trust and he's going to continue to go to him, and that was refreshing to hear as a fan. Obviously, the drops are frustrating, but you love the results of continuing to go to him and having it pay off.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if he can keep being that deep threat and taking the top off of defenses, not letting them kind of stay back and, you know, bring an extra guy into the box to deal with the heavy personnel that the Packers seem to be, you know, excited to use, that just seems to open things up big time for this offense. And I kind of alluded to it a couple of weeks ago that, you know, if he's that consistent deep threat guy, that could give this offense just a completely different dimension than we saw last year and could really open up things for a lot of stuff underneath.
Totally. All right. That is Note Nugs. Hashtag Note Nugs. We will be better about tweeting out after the game to get some fan involvement. Sorry about that, guys. It's early for us too. We didn't get a preseason. We didn't get those reps. So, you know, hey, we're working on it. Let's move on. I want to talk about the offensive line text. You know, we've talked a lot about the uncertainty on the right side of the line. And now we know for sure that Lane Taylor is out for the season. And it's a big blow for the team, but you also got to feel horrible for Taylor, the person. But Tex, what do you think the Packers are going to do here now on the right side of that line?
It's really musical chairs, right? It certainly was in the second half of that game and, you know, John Runyon coming in and playing 15 snaps and as a rookie. And I think it's going to depend a lot on what happens with Billy Turner and Lucas Patrick and whether or not one or both of those guys can play this week. It certainly seemed like they really had Turner kind of penciled in as their right tackle. So if he is healthy and if Patrick is back, I wouldn't be surprised if those two are the starters at right guard and right tackle with Patrick at guard and Turner at tackle. But I thought Rick Wagner played a really good game in relief once Patrick got hurt and Elton Jenkins moved back to left guard. So, you know, I think he's certainly earned an opportunity to continue getting playing time at right tackle. So I think it's just kind of going to be week to week and dictated by, you know, who they have available between Patrick and Turner at this point. So we'll see what happens, but, you know, fingers crossed, it sounds like there's at least a chance that both of those guys can play. Patrick, at least it sounded like somebody said that they thought he'd be probable this week. So at least that gives the Packers one option there at right guard, you know, with Taylor going down. So that you can at least put a five out there that you feel pretty confident in and not necessarily, you know, rely on a guy like Runyon to make a start as a sixth round rookie in his second game.
Yeah. And Rick Wagner, I think, had a lot of fans worried, did not have a great camp, was playing injured a little bit, but had, I think, a lot of people wondering you know, was this a waste of a signing? But I don't know. Maybe he's just a gamer. I thought he did pretty good.
Yeah, he looked solid. And, you know, maybe some of the issues he had in Detroit last year were injury related. You know, who knows? Hopefully that's all it was, because he's been a very solid right tackle for, you know, for much of his NFL career. So, you know, Wisconsin native, former Badger, pulling for the guy. Hope he plays well. And, you know, he certainly seemed to in pretty extended duty on Sunday.
Yeah. And thank our lucky stars for Jenkins, who can play supposedly every slot on the line, even a little center if you need. Maybe he can long snap too. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Ben Fennell, friend of show, tweeted out that he thinks Jenkins might actually be the Packers right tackle of the future. I saw something about that earlier yesterday or today. Just kind of looking at how natural he looked there at right tackle over the first half of the game on Sunday. So that'd be a little bit of an interesting wrinkle, but you figure, you know, your tackles are certainly at least have the reputation of being a more valuable position than guard. And so, you know, if you think he's the guy, you know, maybe a guy like Runyon with what he showed in limited action and Patrick, you know, maybe you could roll with those guys, you know, maybe in 2020 or 21. And I don't know. It certainly seems like an option that they're willing to consider. And they clearly thought that Jenkins at right tackle was, you know, one of their best five with turnout, which I think surprised everybody, myself included. So don't be shocked if we see that again at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, that's the way it goes in the NFL. Injuries force some shuffling in all kinds of positions, and you really discover some hidden gems sometimes, or maybe someone's good at better at one thing than they thought that they might be. So we shall see. I mean, our fingers are crossed there with the offensive line and them being able to shuffle around and hold out for the rest of the year, because I don't know how many more injuries they can handle, but we will see. And in COVID times, we might have to see what it's like to try to bring more linemen in here midseason. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they've only got two guys on the practice squad. It's Jake Hansen, the center, the sixth round pick, and Zach Johnson, an undrafted rookie out of North Dakota State. Two interior guys, which at least there's some depth in the organization there, because, you know, all three guys who are hurt right now are, you know, ostensibly guards. Turner a little bit of tackle, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see at the very least a practice squad signing of a guard at some point this week to kind of bolster that depth.
Yeah. Is it Zach with an H or Zach with a K?
It's with a K. Yeah.
I'm not rooting for that guy. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Just very protective of my name, Zach with an H. All right, let's move on. Talk a little bit about tight end usage. You know, much has been made, obviously, of the quote unquote need at wide receiver for the Packers, but we saw a lot of pass catchers in action all over the field against the Vikings. It was really fun to see. Just in 12 personnel alone, we saw 12 snaps for the combo of Lewis and DeGuara, and 7 snaps for Lewis and my boy Big Bob.
Big
Bob. Tex, does what we saw in terms of formation, snap count, etc. for the pass catchers jive with what you expected out of this Matt LaFleur offense in year two?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense based on, you know, the trends that they've seemed to go with as far as personnel goes with drafting DeGuara in the third round. The one thing, honestly, that surprised me was that Sternberger didn't get more playing time. Even though they had listed him as the third guy on the depth chart, I really thought that they were going to kind of split up snaps pretty evenly between him and Tanyan and Mercedes Lewis. But, with Sternberger being all the way down with only 12 snaps in the game compared to Tanyan with 48, Lewis with 32, that surprised me. But I think maybe DeGuara's 24 snaps really, you know, in those snaps, he probably played like 5 or 6 different positions,
yeah, all over the
across
place.
The offense, from fullback to split out wide to inline to, you know, kind of on the wing. And, you know, he's really that really is that Kyle Juszczyk role that Kyle Shanahan likes to use him in. And LaFleur even alluded to it a little bit on Monday that he calls DeGuara the F tight end in that offense, which is essentially the same position that Juszczyk plays. in that same scheme. So calling him a tight end is, you know, might be a bit of a misnomer, but it's just kind of where he's going to be is, you know, that same, he's that same player, right? That, that they've got in San Francisco. So it was interesting to see. If anything, I thought that this might be the game, given the matchups that the Packers had with that really young corner group for Minnesota, I thought they might go a little more 11 in this one just to take advantage of some of those matchups. Yeah. But even in this game, I mean, they probably spent half their snaps in 12 personnel or maybe even 22 just based on the snap counts. So clearly, I think that's going to be their probably primary base personnel grouping on offense moving forward. And I think you're going to see that even more in the future when there's, you know, more desirable matchups against safeties and linebackers against other teams. Unlike against Minnesota, where, you know, those position groups are so strong and the cornerbacks were definitely the weaker link on defense.
Yeah. And what you thought you might see against the Vikings, maybe we'll end up seeing that against the Lions, a team who, do they have any corners left? Are they just going to field like a couple of UPS drivers or what?
It's hamstring city over there for all the complaints that Packers fans had about hamstring injuries during the Mike McCarthy years. It seems like that, that epidemic has made its way across Lake Michigan.
Hashtag soft tissue.
Yeah. Cause it's what all three of the Lions top corners with hammy issues. Oof. That's no bueno, especially against a receiver unit that did what the Packers did on Sunday.
No bueno. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the week when we preview the Lions game with Jeremy Reisman, who covers the Lions for Pride of Detroit and SB Nation. But really quickly, you know, you mentioned Sternberger. Yeah, he only in that 12 personnel count was only on the field once, and it was Tanyan and Sternberger. So Tanyan double dipping there. I've heard some theories that with Sternberger, it's the kind of thing where they're going to start him out really light and then work him up over time. Not sure if I buy that. I mean, it's public knowledge. I cape for all the tight ends. It's like my thing. So I'm rooting for all of them. Not sure if I buy that. I don't know. Are you worried about Sternberger? What do you think?
I really don't know what to think at this point. But I also think that even though they used a lot of tight ends, they didn't really use them in the passing game much. And that matchup and maybe Rodgers reads was a big part of that. Because I think they combined between all four of those guys, got two pass targets and both of them went to DeGuara. So it clearly was not a focal point to get those guys the football in the passing game, either just using them as decoys or blockers or what have you. So I think maybe it is a little more of a matchup based thing where, again, with teams against teams that have a weaker safety and linebacker group, that might be the way that they go is getting those guys more involved.
Yeah. All right, Tex, let's move on. One last topic here before we get into a little listener mailbag and hear what our fine listeners have to say and want to know about. I just wrote down here for the next topic, DVOA deep dive. So firstly, there was a bit of a kerfuffle on the old Twitter website today with beat guy Rob Demoski and our own Peter Bukowski going at it a little bit. Tex, can you give us the blow-by-blow first on what's going on there?
I don't even know where to start. I mean, the idea that anybody would just immediately dismiss something that has four letters in it that signify a particular analytical stat or measurement is just ridiculous. Because I mean, I'm a firm believer in tape and analytics and numbers coming together to give you the full picture of what's going on. And they work hand in hand, and I don't understand why anybody would tie one of those hands behind their back when trying to analyze something in this game. So yeah, it's we at Acme Packing Company, we're pretty, you know, pretty analytics heavy site. I'll be the first to acknowledge that. We've got some guys that really love to dive into the numbers, and myself included. But I think everybody at our site, I certainly think, you know, has a good dose of perspective and acknowledges when you need to match those up with the tape. And so the reactions to, you know, to the nerds, the old stats are for losers line from Mike McCarthy, just that using that as something to back up your position doesn't really jive for me.
Right. And so for everyone who didn't see this on Twitter, Rob Domofsky at some point in an interaction with someone talking about DVOA basically said, this is what I do when I see DVOA in a story. And it's a gif of someone closing their laptop. Peter Bukowski tries to engage him and basically saying, hey, you know, this is it's a valuable stat. It's useful information. Why don't you want to learn about it? And yeah, Domofsky basically just doubles down and said, I don't want to learn about it. And the icing on the cake at the end, of the exchange is Rob Domofsky saying, it's not blackjack, it's football. There are so many other variables that change from game to game, which I don't necessarily totally disagree with. But then he says, DVOA equals dorks value only analytics. Wow. I love it.
Well, that's a perfect example of not understanding the point. Again, only saying that people are only looking at analytics is just silly. That's misrepresenting everybody's position, and it's a bad faith argument.
It's not misrepresenting some people's position, but
no, that's probably fair. But at least those of us who, you know, again, those of us at Acme Packing Company here, I know Peter is a big tape guy as well as a numbers guy. So he picked the wrong fight, I think, the demo did with the wrong person to pull that line out on, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we are a reasonable bunch here at Acme Packing Company.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. I saw that you tweeted out, you said, since we're having the DVOA discussion, I think Devonte Adams' DVOA puzzle is a perfect example of why it is a valuable stat. His DVOA is often middle of the pack, not because of his talent, but because the Packers don't use him efficiently. And then you referenced an article up at the blog, acmepackingcompany.com. Could you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, one of the things that this is something that's bothered me for a couple of years now, and I finally got a chance to ask the Football Outsiders guys, the ones who compiled the DVOA numbers, about it. Why, you know, Adams is universally considered a top 10, if not a top 5 receiver in the league, but his DVOA numbers never seem to bear that out. And one of the points that they made is the DVOA stat itself is purely an efficiency stat. It's how much value you provide per play relative to average. And that depends a lot on how a player is used. So for example, with Devonte, they throw so many of those little quick screens to him, and those are generally just not very valuable plays, period. I even tweeted about it when they did that in one of the plays in the first half on Sunday.
Yep.
Is they did a little quick RPO screen out to him on the left. He ended up picking up 10 yards, but I said something like, you know, I don't care how much yardage he gained, that's not going to be likely to be a high value play.
That was the exception, not the rule. Yeah.
Exactly. And then they went back to it again and did it again in the second half. And I think he picked up 2 yards on like a second and 8 or something like that. So it's very dependent on, at least in terms of Adams, on the way he's used within the offense and the fact that they funnel so many targets to him. And a lot of them are either low probability targets or just low value targets, like on those screens, that he just doesn't, you know, the pure efficiency numbers don't really show up. His total value is still there because he does catch so many balls. And especially in the last couple of years before last year, he was catching so many touchdowns. Obviously that's a huge value add as well. But, what my point was there is that, you know, something like that can shine a little bit of a light on a factor involving a player or a team and how they're approaching something that might benefit from some changes or some improvement. If you replaced all of those, you know, those little smoke screens with quick slant routes, you probably would be picking up more yardage and, you know, be having a little bit more efficient offense overall. And obviously Adams' numbers would be a little better. So I think that that's a great example of the kind of insight that you can get with a stat like this.
Yeah.
That you kind of marry that up to the tape. Yes, you can see on film that Adams is a great receiver. But then, you know, this kind of puts it into context. All right, how can we use this great receiver better?
Right. Yeah. The supplements, the metrics are a supplement. They are not gospel, but they are valuable and important and should be considered along with film and the old eye test, if we want to go back to the 40s and rub some salt on it. The old eye test. All right, let's move on to the mailbag. We get about 15 seconds of that song so we don't get sued. At the APC Pod on Twitter, the APC Podcast at gmail.com is where you can find us. Send in your questions, love mail, hate mail, all that fun stuff. We're going to start with Joe at Work, who tweets in, why was EQ a healthy scratch while Malik Taylor was active? Seems like something is going on behind the scenes with him. What was up with that, Tex?
I'm not worried about EQ. He's very clearly the fourth receiver in this rotation, or at least he's behind the top three. And if Taylor had gotten snaps on offense with the other guys being healthy, then I'd be concerned. But Taylor was exclusively a special teams guy. So that's where his contributions are going to come unless there's an injury. I think in this case, you know, they felt good about the tight end group, the way they want to run a little heavier personnel. And they were content, you know, only, you know, throwing three receivers out there and rotating them through a little bit. So I don't think it's anything to do with, you know, a problem with EQ behind the scenes or anything. I think it's just a function of, you know, Taylor's a guy that they want to use on special teams more so than EQ. And with four tight ends active, you kind of have to pick your poison a little bit. So, he just kind of was the odd man out. I wouldn't worry about it. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, there were five tight ends active because John Lovett got elevated from the practice squad for the game.
That's right, so, he did.
So he was playing on special teams, and I think he got one snap during the kneel down period with Tim Boyle at the end of the game on offense. So when you get nine spots devoted to your receivers and tight ends, and five of those go to tight ends, that kind of just limits your options a little bit on offense.
Yep, I definitely agree. Ted writes in to the email inbox, Ted in Virginia, hello, for the first time in the 2020 season. He says, my question is, what are the chances you think that the Packers will regret not getting Aaron Rodgers more playmakers on offense? End quote. That is it's a common question. It felt kind of squishy all offseason. We've got one game under our belts now. What do you think, Tex? I mean, the passing game looks pretty good. It's one game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If we're judging based on Sunday, my concern level is close to zero.
Right.
I'm still a big EQ believer though. So going back to the previous question, I think if something happens to one of those top three, I think EQ can step in and play really, I think he could play any of those roles. Whether it's the deep threat, I think he's got enough speed for that. And I think he tracks deep balls better than MVS does. He could be the kind of low volume efficiency guy that Lazard is. I'm not so worried there, especially again, you've got the way they're going to like to go big. My level of concern is relatively low at this point. But I do think that if there is an injury to one of the receivers, that's probably a position where they might be a little thin and, you know, anything more than one guy going down, or if, you know, God forbid it's Adams who comes up with some sort of injury or something. Yeah. I think that's a potential concern, but, and I mean, they did try to account for that a little bit, at least with acquiring Funchess this off season, which, you know, with him opting out, that kind of takes one other, weapon out of the arsenal.
Right.
So my level of concern, I would say, is still, you know, below, in the 10 to 20% range. I still feel good about this group. We'll have to see where it takes us.
I heard you say volume and efficiency in your answer, and I slowly pretended to close my laptop. So. All right, moving on. BK tweets in. He says, why can they never get a playoff in time and continue to burn timeouts? I want to say, because I tracked this a little bit last season, they have been better last season and also as well in this game, been better than they have historically in the last couple of years at getting the play off with more time on the clock. They have been better than they have been, but they slip up sometimes, and the play calls are long, and Rodgers has talked about it. LaFleur has talked about it, and burning timeouts. That was a thing I noted. I wrote it down as I was watching the game because usually that comes back to bite you. They burned two timeouts. They had one timeout left in the first half, and They ended up scoring again 11 seconds on that drive within 25 seconds. So that was awesome, but you'd also like to be able to start that drive with more timeouts, more options. So did that seem like, was that more of the same? It seems like BK thinks it was more of the same. What do you think, Tex?
I think you hit it on the head, is that in general, they're getting up to the line a little more consistently with a little bit more time left. But yeah, there's still those individual instances, and there's still a lot of them. You mentioned the two in the first half. I think there was a third one in the second half too, where they burned one, due to the play clock. So LaFleur kind of took that one on himself, this week, saying that, you know, he's got to get the play call in better, saying that a couple of those instances were, when they kind of had the dual play call where, you know, you've got the option of checking out of one and into the other. And that's that kind of communication piece that really they've been talking about all off season. So it's frustrating, certainly, to come down and not have more than one timeout with, you know, 30 seconds left when you're trying to double up on the scoreboard. I don't know how much, what more they can do that they wouldn't have already done this off season though. And that's just kind of concerning that, you know, it once or twice a game, this might just happen for whatever reason. And it's a bummer, but I do like the fact that there's instances where they've been getting to the line quicker. There was one third down and about four where I think Rodgers got to the line, you know, got the team to the line with about 25 seconds on the play clock. And you just knew that the hard count was coming. And then he was going to try to get him off sides, which he did.
He still fell for it. I can't believe it.
Yeah. And then, you know, the play call came in after getting to the line, seeing the alignment of the defense, get that play call in. And then he called they got the hard count, got the offsides, and then got a great big gain to MVS on one of his other big ones. So I don't know if that really answered the question. Sorry if I tiptoed around it, but I don't know what more there is to do if they've already tried simplifying the language of the offense.
I like your answer. It's just going to happen a couple times a year. Embrace it. Make it a drinking game. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, there
just
you go.
Do what you got to do. Lastly, speaking of drinking, good old Matub tweets in, what's the best beer to drink after a victory against Detroit? I love the optimism, and we are going to preview the Detroit Lions game in a couple days here. No puns or clever answers for me. It's still kind of hot here in Albuquerque, so I keep it light with a Pilsner from a local brewery called Marble, a good local brewery here. Tex, what about you? After the Detroit victory...
First, I can say I can confirm from personal experience that Marble's got some good stuff.
So, oh yeah, we went there together. Yeah, that's right.
We did. That was the last place I went before lockdown happened. Was
pre-COVID.
When we recorded the pod and hung out there in Albuquerque a little bit. All right. So if it's there's so many good beers to pick from Michigan that rub a little salt in the wound by drinking something of theirs, but. If you really want to go with something quality, and I've got Bell's, really anything from Bell's is solid. If you want to go for the bitter taste that the Lions tend to have after the way they lost to the Packers the last couple games, you could always go with the Two-Hearted, real nice.
I love
hoppy,
the Two-Hearted, yeah.
Nice hoppy IPA. If you want something that's, you know, if it's just a complete Packers blowout, they've got a Black Note Stout that they make every once in a while at Bell's that is, you know, bourbon aged or bourbon barrel aged stout, you know, looks like motor oil pouring into the glass. So smooth. It is delicious. So, but really anything from Bell's, you can't go wrong.
Feeling your oats, man. Just ask you booze questions and you're just, you are very comfortable. All right. Whoops. That's the wrong sounder. We need preseason here. I'm going to hit the polka. There we go.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a professional. That is going to do it for us here until Thursday night. Please consider giving us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Positive rating helps us reach more people, and it makes us feel good, too. If Patreon is your thing, you can support us there. Patreon.com/notenugs. Every dollar helps keep up with equipment costs. Words are hard. Gear upgrades, other resources to help bring you the show. Patreon.com/notenugs. NOTENUGS. A quick shout out to a three-way tie so far for first place in the APC Podcast Listener Pick'em League. Chris, Vitor, and Smoke Boof. Nice work, everybody. We're going to be back in a couple days with special guest Jeremy Reisman to preview week two against the Detroit Lions. Until then, everybody out there, Tex with your bourbon. Go Pack, go. Keep your stick on the ice.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.